Alright, please explain to me what's going on, okay?
There, we have there's a note left in our daughter's gun.
A note was left in your daughter's gun?
Yes.
How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's blind. 6 years old.
How long ago was this?
I don't know. I just found the note. And my daughter's
gun. Is it saying who took her?
What?
Is it saying who took her?
I don't know. There's a ransom note here.
It's a ransom note?
It says FBTC. Victory. Please.
Okay, what's your name? Are you
Kathy Ramsey? I'm the mother. Oh my God! Please.
I'm sending an officer over, okay?
Please.
Do you know how long she's been gone?
No, I don't. Please, we just got out. Is she right here? Oh my God, please.
Okay,
please, is somebody.
I am, honey.
Please.
Take a deep breath.
Please,
okay.
Hurry.
Kathy.
Hey everybody, welcome back to my podcast. My name is Eden and this is another segment of Brutal Crime. As you can tell by the audio recording I have just played for you, we are going to be discussing the infamous JonBenet Ramsey. Now I know what you're thinking, oh my god, why this case again? Everybody does this case. People do this case all the time. They talk about it all the time. It's all over the news. It's all over YouTube. Every crime investigator, any paranormal investigator, any book writer, crime solver, whatever, they always do this case. But here's where you kind of need to put that opinion on the back burner, because there's a reason why we do this. There's a reason why we are so intuned to this case, okay? And it's because this case has never been solved. It is the case that has the most evidence, the most gut-wrenching testimony, the most, absolutely ridiculous outcome, and it's never been solved. There has been so much evidence linking to certain people that are responsible for this child's murder. We have ransom note. We've got eyewitness testimony. We have pedophiles. We have the beauty world. We have two parents. We've got literally odd behavior, weird circumstances, and no conviction whatsoever. This child died in 1996. I was 6 years old. I remember watching this on the news. I also remember watching her before this ever happened to her. I remember knowing that she was pretty much our first toddler in Tiara, basically. It was just like the way she was. She was like this happy child. She was beautiful. She was in the pageant world. She was a very, very, very beautiful young woman. And I get, not young woman, she was a young child. But it's the fact that sometimes people just, they look at this kind of situation, they're like, oh, you know what? The mom was so obsessed with being perfect. You know, that's part of the reason why I hate Toddlers and Tiaras. I will never watch that show. It pisses me off because you just see these moms and they're primping these girls' hair up. They're, you know, they have all this makeup on them. And it's like, hello, you are literally making it so possible for them to be targets by pedophiles. Like, that is my opinion. Don't come after me for that. It's just my opinion. I think the whole toddler and tiara thing, children being publicly blasted all over social media wearing these skimpy little outfits with their hairs on, with their hair all curly, with their eyeshadow, and wearing these very interesting looking outfits. Their mothers are crazed and crazy, and it's just sick, in my opinion. But in this case, a child actually did die, and not a single conviction in her death has ever been made. And we don't know what to make of it. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to keep talking about it. We're going to talk about it for the rest of our lives. I could be 90 years old and still talking about this case because I want it solved. And so does everybody else who does this case. We talk about it to keep her alive and well. And guess what? Her memory is alive and it is very, very, very important to all of us. That is why we talk about this case. So if you're thinking, oh, great, another JonBenet podcast, go ahead. Unplug your headphones. Don't listen to the podcast. I really don't care because the only people that should be listening to this podcast are the people that actually want to solve her murder. The people who are interested in making sure a child who lost her life in a horrible, horrible, horrible way gets justice. Because that is what this is about. This is about justice for JonBenet. I want to see her murder solved. I want to see somebody go to prison for her murder. I want to have justice for this child as any other person in the world would. Nobody wants to go the rest of their lives without wondering who the hell killed this child. Like, that's just what I'm saying. And let me just explain why we are so adamant about having this case solved, okay? So, there have been cold cases that have been well over 30 years that have recently been solved because of evidence, because somebody finally found evidence. There have been cases of bodies that have vanished over many, many years, not a shred of evidence linking them to their captor, none whatsoever. But then, bam, out of nowhere, one simple thing blows the case wide open, and their murder is solved. For instance, there was a young teenage girl who was abducted. They found her car in a lake, I believe, and they did forensics all over that car, found nothing. But they found a single hair on an arm, an arm hair, a tiny arm hair that had been submerged in a lake, in a car, for well over like a year or two. And they were able to solve a murder by a single arm hair. The West Memphis three teenage boys convicted of the murder of three young 8-year-old boys in a small town, not a shred of evidence linking these children to the crimes of the other children. They went to prison for 18 years with absolutely not a single bit of evidence other than accusations, false testimony, coerced judgment, coerced interviews, and a speedy conviction. And 18 years of their lives they spent in prison until they finally were released, because guess what? Turns out they didn't kill the kids. Yet, JonBenet's murder, thousands and pieces of evidence, thousands, okay? I'm talking literal thousands of pieces of factual evidence. Internet stories, you've got people interviewing the Ramseys. You have all of the documentation. You have the ransom note. You've got the DNA evidence. You've got literal proof something happened to that child. And yet, here we are in year 2020 and no one has solved her case. Please tell me that is not fucked up, because it is. It really is. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We are going to talk about JonBenet because, God forbid, one of these people who is responsible for her murder needs to go down, and I would like to see that happen soon. Or at least some point in time throughout my life. I would love to see her case solved. We have the manpower, we have the evidence, you've got the ability. So that leads all of us crime investigator, you know, wannabes, that just basically shows us, hey, this is much bigger than DNA. Somebody of power is holding this information. Somebody's covering. It's obvious. Something is very wrong here. We need to figure it out. But let's go ahead and just jump right in. Let's talk about it. Okay? So, JonBenet she was born as JonBenet Patricia Ramsey. So the story behind her name is actually very sweet. Her father, John, and her mother, Patsy. So you have John and Patsy. Benet is basically like a French word. So they put JonBenet like for John and then Patricia for Patsy. So they like basically combined her two parents. They combined their names with hers and put a French twist on it. It's actually very sweet. And I absolutely love the name. And if you haven't noticed, there is nobody else in the world named JonBenet, or at least none I've heard. I've never seen another child named JonBenet. And that says something to you. It really does. Her name is untouchable. Do you know how powerful that is? To have a name and never hear anybody name their child that. If I'm wrong, please send me the proof of this. But I have never in my research seen a person at all with the name JonBenet ever. I really don't think there is. That is crazy. To have so many people reusing names after like Cleopatra or, I mean, hell, I met somebody named Castlevania once. That's insane. But not a single person I've ever met or have ever seen name their child JonBenet. Ever. Her name is untouchable. And there's a reason for it. It's a very powerful reason too. So she was basically this young child who, she was born August 6th, 1990. And she died December 25th, 1996. She was this American child beauty queen, okay? So her mom put her in all these different pageants. You know, she did her hair, did her makeup, you know. And Patsy is basically seen as the kind of possessive mom. If you guys hear that in the background, that's my son. Oh my goodness. He's always in the background of my podcast because my husband's always the one watching him when I do these. So I do apologize if you can hear it. It's fine. So anyways, so Patsy is basically described as this perfectionist. Okay. She wants everything to be perfect. So she, you know, she matches to her daughter. Her and her daughter always are matching. Everything has to be perfect. Everything has to be picture perfect. I mean, that's just the kind of person she was. She was a perfectionist. And sometimes that can be a little dangerous, which is why I steer clear of the whole toddler and tiara, because I think it's exploiting. And I feel like it's a very dangerous game that these mothers are playing, especially with the way the world works today. Anyways, so she was killed in her home in Boulder, Colorado. Now, her home is described as this, like, nice, big, fancy Tudor home, basically. It's huge. You can actually go on YouTube, and you can actually see a walkthrough of JonBenet's house. It's insane. It's the most beautiful house I think I've ever seen for that time. But anyways, so a lengthy handwritten ransom note was found in the house. So her father, John, was the one who found her, and they found her 8 hours after she had been reported missing. So her injuries showed that she basically was hit in the back of the skull. Okay, so she had like a huge, huge bash in the back of her skull, and she had been strangled, and she was the cord was found tied around her neck, and the autopsy report basically stated that the official cause of death was asphyxia by strangulation. It was also proven that she was sexually assaulted. Now, I'm going to get into that later, probably in part two, which I'm going to record all in one. So, it's just insane to me. It really is. It scares me because this is just a young child who literally lost her life in the worst way, but the way the events of this crime took place doesn't make sense. And this has the entire world on their feet, literally screaming at the top of their lungs, hello, something is very wrong here. And you guys are apparently, we know you see it. You can't just ignore this, obviously. Everybody knows what happened to this child. Why is nobody solving this goddamn case? This is just what I think. So anyways, let's see. So her death was definitely ruled as a homicide. So the case basically, the public, media, everybody just kind of like got swarmed into this. It's like, it's just so stupid. This whole thing is open. It's still going on. Nobody solved this case. It's just so flippin' stupid. Okay. She's actually buried at St. James Episcopal Cemetery in Marietta, Georgia. Okay. And it is so weird how they have the coordinates of her. I mean, I guess I can understand if you ever want to go visit her gravesite, but I feel like people shouldn't even go to her gravesite until her freaking case is solved, because I mean, I don't know. I just feel like she's out there and she's saying, please solve my case. You know, hello, I'm getting solve my case here. And then, you know, it's horrible. It makes me so sad. Okay. So in this article that I'm reading off the Wikipedia, this is just kind of like basic stuff. Okay. That has like some of the information, but not all of the information. Internet is good with that. Once you read something somewhere, you're going to find something with a whole bunch more evidence on that one. So basically the police, they suspected that the ransom note had actually been written by Patsy. Now, when the ransom note was found, it was a 3-page, it was such a lengthy ransom note. When a child or people who have a victim and they are putting a ransom note out there, they will not have it so lengthy, okay? It's literal statistics. We are such and such. We have your child. This is what we want. Please meet our demands. Here are our terms. We will be in contact. That's it. There's nothing else to that, okay? So this ransom note was 3 pages long. I'm gonna read you what the ransom note says, okay? Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We do respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attached to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be well rested. Rested. There's no well in there. My bad. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money, and hence an earlier delivery pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instruction will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement, countermeasures, and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory. S-B-T-C. That is what the ransom note said. It is in serious detail. It is creepy. It sounds just absolutely ridiculous. However, it does get your brain going. But Here's the problem. When JonBenet was allegedly missing, Patsy was the one who called the police. She called police, basically. 911, that's what you heard. But in the ransom note, it says, do not associate with police or you will stand no chance in seeing your daughter ever again, basically. So they didn't necessarily follow the instructions on the ransom note. So there is a possible chance that there really was an organization that had captured JonBenet and had her hidden. Their house was flipping huge. They had a train room, okay? A train room and a wine cellar, literally. There are so many places to hide a child. There are so many places for this to happen. And it's just like, you know, when you look at that fact and you look at the evidence on that, it does seem logical to assume that maybe when Patsy called the police, that is what killed her daughter. But we won't know because everything else that happened after that just didn't make any sense. So there was an officer on scene when the officer finally got to the house, and they looked over the house. They searched throughout the house. They even went downstairs. They looked in the train room. There was nothing. They even opened up the wine cellar and they didn't turn the light on though. So there was nothing in there. They didn't see anything. There was absolutely nothing there. So already there's no body. There's no sign of JonBenet. So I guess what happened from an interview that I'm actually going to play the audio recording of that for you just so you can hear it yourself. But it's very clear that they did not follow the instructions on the ransom note. Because here's the problem. When this happened, when JonBenet went missing, they were in a panic, right? Everybody was panicking. Everybody was freaking out. However, the Ramseys invited people over to their house. I'm guessing that at this time, that was just kind of what was going through their brain. They were thinking, okay, we need comfort. We need help. We need people to sit and hold us and pray with us. And because they were devout Christians, supposedly. I'm not going to speculate, okay? It's just, I don't know. I'm a little... Okay, we're not even going to go there. So anyways, so they invited people over to the house. Honestly, none of this seems right. Okay? You're reading a ransom note. It literally says in the ransom note, if you talk to the police, if you do this, your daughter's going to die. They gave specific instructions, no matter what. Your daughter is going to die. 99% chance that you are going to kill your daughter. Not like literally somebody else would kill her, but they were very clear in the ransom note. You do this and your daughter will die. So basically, from the beginning, you're thinking, wait a second, if you're reading a ransom note and it literally tells you that your daughter is going to die, what would you really risk that and call the police? Because if, God forbid, if my child ever went missing and I had a ransom note like that, hell no. I would not call police. I would be terrified to even breathe for fear of making the wrong move. I would follow the instructions on the ransom note to the exact T. And if something came up and something happened that, you know, proved something else was different, you know, then that would be clause. But at that particular point in time, the last thing I would ever do is read a ransom note that tells me exact instructions. And one of those instructions is not to speak of the police or anybody of it. The last thing I would do is call the police because they literally just told me my child's going to die if I do that. So none of that makes sense to me. Which also leads you to believe that they already knew JonBenet was already dead. So it wouldn't have mattered regardless. Had they not known that JonBenet was actually gone, I'm positive that they would never have called the police and they would have abided by the rules of the ransom note. Now, that is my opinion. So, don't come after me. It's just an opinion. So, anyways, So the officer was there. They looked around the house. Nothing too much came over about all of this. But I guess the police officer, he left, I think. And there was another officer that showed up. And I'm going to play her interview because it's insane. But before I do that, I wanted to explain something. The ransom note asks for literally the exact amount of John's Christmas bonus was in his bank account. That's exactly how much they asked for, to the dollar, to the cent, okay? Now, what most people, you know, have pointed out, which is a very clear indicator that something isn't right here, these people were banking at the millions. Do you understand? Like, these were very, very, very wealthy people. $118,000, that's chump change to them. That's exactly how much he had in his Christmas bonus. So, these people were seriously wealthy. He could have easily made that deposit immediately. I mean, hell, if they even asked for $1 million, that would have been easy for him to do. So it strikes me a little odd knowing how wealthy these people were, and these supposed kidnappers only asked for the exact amount of the ransom in the ransom as his Christmas bonus. If I was a kidnapper, which I'm not, and if I was holding a ransom, I'd be going after everything that they got. That's how I would have thought that most people do. You have a child and you've got these wealthy parents and you know they're millionaires and you're only asking for how much he got for his Christmas bonus. That doesn't make sense to me. So this is basically one of those things that strikes you as odd because he had the money. He had the $118,000. He knew that he had it. Yet, why didn't he just go to the bank, take all the money out, and do what he was supposed to do if he had no idea his daughter was dead? Which leads you to believe that he knew his daughter was dead. This would have been an easy thing for him sooner rather than later. He had an appointment. All he had to do was make it, and he didn't. So those are just a couple of brief red flags. Now, when the officer got there, the second officer, there was supposed to be a ransom call, basically. Somebody was going to call them, and they were going to discuss the terms, and there was a specific time, and it was going to be between 8 and 10 a.m. So there was an officer that had arrived to assist in this ransom, which is also another issue. Because literally the ransom note said, don't involve the police or your daughter's going to die. But here you are, you're calling the police and oh my God, you know, people are, oh my goodness. So anyways, the officer there, she was basically getting really just kind of uneasy. She was the only officer there, which also doesn't strike me as normal because if a child goes missing, there is absolutely no reason why there should be just one officer. There would be several officers. There would be people coming, but I guess there was supposedly a meeting that everybody had to attend to, which didn't make any sense to me. Anyways, so she said she was taking mental notes of everything. She was listening to people's comments. She was taking into certain aspects of what was going around. She was trying to assess the situation, but not making any crucial judgments because the things that she was seeing were striking her as very odd and not normal. So I'm going to play her interview, and this is what she said.
It all began with a call at 6:30 in the morning from her sergeant.
He said there's been a kidnapping. It involves a 6-year-old girl. There was a ransom note, a 2.5-page ransom note. And according to the ransom note, there was going to be a phone call from the author, and they were supposed to call between 8 and 10 a.m. So I was supposed to get to the house for purposes of monitoring the phone call.
8:10 a.m. Arndt arrived at the Ramsey home and meets John Ramsey for the first time.
How did he strike you?
Cordial.
Cordial?
Mm-hmm.
Upset?
Cordial.
Distraught?
Cordial.
Did it strike you at all that he was... that was behavior that was unusual for somebody whose child was just kidnapped?
It's been my experience that people respond to trauma in different ways. So if someone has a response that is different from mine, I don't put judgment to it. I'll just note it.
And that is what she says she did all morning, make mental notes of all things curious, including, she says, the fact that Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey remained apart in separate rooms for most of the day. That at one point, she says John Ramsey took time out in the middle of the crisis to read his mail.
I remember seeing John in the kitchen, looking through his mail, and I made a note that he was looking at his mail, and then I wondered, where did your mail come from?
Isn't it possible maybe he was opening the mail looking for a clue from the kidnapper?
I don't know. And I don't speculate. It's a piece of information that I see. It's something that I note.
You thought it was unusual, however.
I can say that it stuck out.
10 a.m., the deadline imposed by the writer of the ransom note for a telephone call.
10 o'clock comes and goes, and there's no acknowledgement within the house from anyone that the deadline imposed by the author of the ransom note has come and gone.
Nobody said it's 10 o'clock and the kidnappers haven't called?
Nobody said that.
Was that something else you took note of?
Absolutely.
By 10:30 in the morning, Arndt was the only police officer in the house with John and Patsy Ramsey, their pastor, and four family friends. As they waited for news, the tension was mounting. Arndt called her station house for backup repeatedly, but none had arrived.
How many times did you call the police department asking where your backup was and what was going on?
Well, I remember at least two calls. Both times I was told everybody's in a meeting. They got your message, and that was it.
Were you feeling pressure being in charge of a group this large and with anxiety that high?
I felt tremendous pressure.
1:01 p.m., although the house had already been searched by patrolmen before she arrived, Arndt says that in order to break the building tension, she asked John Ramsey and his friend Fleet White to search the house again, top to bottom, looking for anything out of place. She says she gave them specific instructions not to touch anything. She says John Ramsey headed straight to the basement. She heard Fleet White scream for an ambulance, and then a chilling discovery. For Arndt, the pieces of the puzzle fell into place.
And I see John Ramsey carrying JonBenet up the last three steps from the basement. And my mind exploded. And everything that I had noted that morning that stuck out instantly made sense. And JonBenet was clearly dead. Then she's been dead for a while. I ordered him to put JonBenet down. I knelt next to her and I leaned down to her face. And John leaned down opposite me. And his face was just inches from mine. And we had a nonverbal exchange that I will never forget. And he asked if she was dead. And I said, yes, she's dead. And I told him to go back to the room and to dial 911. And as we looked at each other, I remember, and I wore a shoulder holster, tucking my gun right next to me and consciously counting, I've got 18 bullets.
Why did you do that?
Because I didn't know if we'd all be alive when people showed up. I said that everything made sense in that instance. And I knew what happened.
Do you think your fear was well-founded?
You bet I do. There's no doubt in my mind.
To this day?
Never wavered.
You were afraid because you thought the killer was still in the house.
I knew it.
Absolutely?
Absolutely.
1:10 p.m., Detective Arndt moved JonBenet's body from the hallway to the living room.
John Ramsey came back into the living room, and he grabbed a throw that was on the back of a chair, and he says, could you please cover her body? And as he's saying it, he's already put the blanket on top of her.
Arndt would later be harshly criticized for two key decisions, asking John Ramsey to search the house and allowing John Ramsey to place the blanket on JonBenet's body.
You had to know that that was going to contaminate evidence.
JonBenet's body was in and of itself a crime scene. Would it be nice if John hadn't found JonBenet? Absolutely. And would it be nice if he hadn't put a blanket? Yeah, it would be great. And it would be nice if there were other people to help control and keep people away. That would have been wonderful. But that's not the circumstances that I had available that day.
Still alone in the living room with John Ramsey, Arndt then heard Patsy Ramsey's voice.
And I heard a wail, just a guttural moan, aching wail from the back area. It's probably one of the most pitiful things I've ever heard, and anguished. And I saw the rest of the people, the Patsy and the pastor and the four friends, come from the den towards the living room. So I said, if you want to say goodbye to JonBenet, this is the only time you'll have to do it. And, there's just so much. There's so much pain. And I called 911. I get my radio number. And I said, the kidnapping has turned into a murder.
This house had suddenly become a homicide crime scene.
Oh, it became hell. JonBenet was brought up about 5 minutes after one. And at 10 after one, nobody'd shown up. And I looked out the window to the street and I saw an ambulance slowly drive by. And I thought, I am in the Twilight Zone.
Meanwhile, the pastor led the Ramseys and their friends in prayer in the living room, holding hands as JonBenet's body lay before them.
I thought that would be the best way to organize everyone, to keep them distracted, to keep them from touching JonBenet, and to keep them focused on something other than looking at JonBenet.
1:20 p.m., after 3 hours as the only officer on what Arndt calls an incredibly tense crime scene, and 20 minutes after JonBenet's body was found, backup finally arrived. The next day, the autopsy on JonBenet was conducted. Linda Arndt was there.
I hadn't seen savagery done to a child or even an adult until the doctor peeled back her scalp and saw that horrific fracture to her head. It was the length of her head.
It was 8.5 inches long, and there was something else even more disturbing.
She had trauma to her vagina.
What kind of trauma?
It would be trauma that would be consistent with injuries seen in sexual assault cases.
Recently?
I guess the best way to say that was what was seen was not a first-time injury.
The coroner, in fact, said the evidence was inconclusive, but ABC News has confirmed that three medical experts who consulted for the Boulder Police Department concluded the injuries were consistent with prior sexual abuse. As the Ramsey investigation dragged on for weeks, then months, and then years, the criticism of Linda Arndt's actions that December day continued. But she still defends her actions, saying she has become a scapegoat for a flawed investigation. And Linda Arndt remains convinced that she knows who killed JonBenet Ramsey. She will not say the killer's name, but has no doubt that justice will never be done.
Do you think this person will ever be indicted, will ever be charged or convicted?
No.
What you're saying is, whoever killed JonBenet will get away with murder.
Yes.
That was 1999. In June of 2001, a federal judge dismissed her lawsuit, saying Arndt failed to prove the police chiefs violated her First Amendment rights. Stay tuned to ABC News Now and ABCNews.com for the latest information. That's all for this special edition of Time Tunnel. Now back to the present with ABC News.
Okay, so after you have listened to that, it basically kind of gives you a different perspective, because this was an officer that was on scene, who did make two very crucial mistakes, but at the same time, the law enforcement waited way too long. The way that this whole entire thing panned out was completely opposite of how a proper investigation should have taken place. So she was basically only there at the house to assist with the ransom note, the phone call that was supposed to take place between 8 and 10 a.m. And the ransom people never called. And nobody asked about the ransom note, literally. So she started trying to pinpoint some key factors. So she's like, wait a second. The ransom said, we're going to call between 8 and 10. Well, it's past 8 o'clock. It's past 9 o'clock. It's past 10 o'clock. No phone call. Nobody says anything. Nobody wonders. Nobody finds it odd. Nobody mentions the phone call, period. So in a situation like that, if a parent gets a ransom call, or a ransom note, and it specifically states that they're going to call at a certain time, I would be wondering, what the hell, why aren't they calling? I would be freaking out. I would be livid. I would be wondering what the hell was going on, because they were supposed to call, and they never did. So this was a red flag from the beginning. Now, with the way she describes John's behavior, he was cordial. He was basically just, cordial is basically like, it's kind of like a calm and relaxed sense of feeling. To give you a proper definition of what cordial actually means, it is warm and friendly, like the atmosphere was cordial and relaxed. Another one is a comforting or pleasant situation. Basically, it's just like calm and collect. When someone says they were acting very cordial, they were calm, they were collect, they were pleasant. They didn't necessarily seem like they were too worried about anything. That was another red flag that just striked her as a little bit odd. Any parent who is missing a child, any parent who would get a ransom note like that and find their child not in their beds, nowhere to be found, completely gone, especially at 6 years old, no one's going to be cordial. No one's going to be calm and collect. People are going to be freaking the hell out. People are going to be distraught. They're going to be overly emotional. They're going to be literally feeling like they can't breathe. This is just a normal reaction. Apparently, everybody responds to trauma and scary situations differently, which the officer actually did elaborate. She's like, well, I wasn't going to judge the situation because, you know, he probably was just trying to remain calm and collect because this was a stressful situation and he didn't want to overly be emotional about it, just in case that he needed to be somehow mentally present for what was happening and what was going to happen. So there's many different reasons why he acted cordial. However, to any other person, it seems odd. The only way that it would actually make sense is as if you yourself were personally feeling that situation. So only you could know why somebody was feeling cordial if you had actually had to go through that. So nobody knows why. It's just, the just strike are a little bit odd. A normal person would be freaking out, but maybe he was just different. So the whole issue about the him going into the kitchen to look through his mail, she was just like, wait a second, your daughter is missing. They were supposed to receive a ransom call. They were supposed to, you know, be talking to the people who were going to hand over their daughter. And yet he's in the kitchen and he's reading his mail. None of that made any sense to the officer on scene. So when she had arrived on scene, it was kind of like one of those moments where you're just like, is this actually happening? Like, what's going on here? Nobody came and backed her up. She had no backup. So she had absolutely no idea how to handle a situation that was by herself. There were people in the house. This was a kidnapping investigation. You've got a pastor in the living room. You've got John. You've got Patsy. You've got several of their friends just sitting in their living room. There's people there, and nobody is focusing on the damn ransom note. No one's focusing on the phone call. John's checking his mail. They're praying in the living room. None of this makes any sense. So, I'm almost betting that the officer did this, because she's like, I want to test the situation. I want to see how he reacts. I want to see exactly what he does. I want to watch him play this out. So, when she ordered John to search the house from top to bottom, that was her first mistake. She said not to touch anything. Yet, she didn't follow the men anywhere. She didn't go and say, okay, I want you to look through the house and then go with them. Because, for one, if she would have done that, she would have known completely what the situation was. However, she just told them to go off on their own and find and look through everything without even assisting them. So that was, first mistake was telling them to search the house. Second mistake was her not going with them. So now we're basically getting into the part where all of this starts to unfold. One right after the other. Okay, so one of the key factors in this investigation was John's behavior. When the officer told him to search the house, he went straight for the basement. She said top to bottom, okay? And he just went straight to the bottom. There was no, I'm going to go upstairs and I'm going to check underneath the beds. I'm going to check the closets. I'm going to check, you know, in the cupboards. I'm going to check everything. This house is flipping huge. She could possibly be anywhere. There could be something missing. Maybe we can just look through our house. However, the ransom note said that they had their daughter. So immediately you don't think that your daughter's going to be there anyways, but still checking. Starting from the top to the bottom, that would be the most efficient way to search for a child in your home, is searching the top floor all the way through and then working your way down to the bottom and then making sure every inch of that house is completely covered and investigated. However, he went straight to the basement where they had searched prior, okay? Now, the man that was with John when they were searching this place stated that John walked straight into the basement where the wine cellar was. He had noticed that there was like a window broken, okay? And he was like, I think I broke that months ago.